You are watching Game Time Decisions. I am Gabriel Morenci. Welcome to the program that puts his money where his fantasies are on the Fantasy Sports Network. We've got a ton of stuff to get to on the program today. A full house. The man, the myth, the legend. Mike Cardano joins us in a studio this afternoon. We'll also be joined by the 1989 American League Rookie of the Year, Greg Olson, joins us on the program. And you know what? When I found out that Greg Olson had time to join us today, I was fired up. I'm like, man, one of my favorite players in the National Football League. Maybe I'll ask him to send me $8,000 for the money that I lost on his Carolina Panthers. But no, it's the other Greg Olson, the Rookie of the Year, the pitcher, damn good closer, Greg Olson. He's going to step up and then join us. We're going to talk some baseball with Greg Olson. We're talking NIT and NCAA basketball, Final Four with Ian Cameron, a.k.a. Babano. So we got a Babano and a Cardano on the show today. And, we'll jump into the Final Four as the week progresses. But I don't want to undersell what's going on at Madison Square Garden tonight. It's a rarity that we actually could have some good basketball played tonight on the Garden hardwood. And that's not true, actually. There's good basketball played in Madison Square Garden, I don't know, maybe about like 25 times a year with all the combined college games that go on there. But the world's most famous arena. And don't forget, guys, if you're unaware of this, I know it's hard to believe, but the NIT used to be more popular than the NCAA. Teams used to say, no, we're not going to the NCAA. We're going to Madison Square Garden. We want to play at the NIT. Well, you know what? The NIT is still very, very prestigious, and we have a very interesting Final Four in the NIT. So we break that down as well. We're going to break. We're going to start talking more Major League Baseball. We're going to break down some Major League Baseball props on the show today with Cardano. We have some fun props as far as 20 game winners, saves. Will a team win 100 games? Specialty props for the upcoming Major League Baseball season. How many no hitters are there going to be? So we'll break that down with Mike Cardano. But it is official. The Raiders are moving. And, you know, we could just save this right now. And I'm not getting any younger, actually. So we should just save this and, play this in 20 years or 40 years when I'm dead. All right? And it'll be pertinent. The Raiders are moving. Stop tape. Like, you know what I mean? Raiders are moving. The Raiders are moving, and it's funny because I used to live in Los Angeles, California in the late 80s and the early 90s when the Raiders were there, and the Raiders left. And I remember the Raiders, like, fleecing all the local counties around Los Angeles. And, you know, we're going to come to your, like, gravel pit out here in Oxnard. But you're going to have to give us $5 million non-refundable deposits so we can do a study whether we're going to leave or not. So the apple hasn't fallen far from the tree with Mark Davis. From the old man Al. Al would be proud that, that the son has managed to fleece Las Vegas for $750 million and a free stadium. Will they throw in a haircut too? I don't know. Time will tell. But it's amazing how history repeats itself over and over and over with the Raiders. Now, generally, I'm not a big fan of relocation. You know, I think about the kids. What about the kids? Somebody think of the children, please. You know, what about little Timmy, man? You know, little Timmy. Little Timmy, you know, grows up, he's a big, big local sports fan, team leaves, rips his heart out. And I've been through this before, and I get it. But it's hard to really have anything bad to say about the move to Las Vegas. And we'll get to this in a second. So the Raiders are going to go to Vegas, but the stadium's not ready. They haven't started building the damn stadium yet. And, here's the strip. All right, the stadium of all the shots. Great shot of Vegas, guys, but we don't have where the stadium's going to be here. Where's the hockey stadium? The hockey arena is like right there. But nevertheless, the stadium's going to be across from Mandalay Bay. That's going to be real cool. But they want to play in Oakland for the next 2 years still. Like, I'm thinking, really? That's like your wife telling you that, you know what, I've hooked up with a dude, but I can't move in with him for another 2 years. So I'm just going to stay here and just pretend like everything's fine and, you know, just continue to pay for me. But in 2 years, I'm freaking out of here because I got a better deal with another dude. Like, you know, really? Like, you know, Raider Nation, not only should you guys like throw batteries, and you know it's too bad for like Derek Carr and these guys, but you guys should cheer for the visiting teams from here on out. Because I tell you what, and if you're in Las Vegas, don't get too attached, people, all right? Well, you can be attached for the next like 15, 20 years. They're going to go to Reno. That's what'll be next. Even has a great ring to it. The Reno Raiders. You know, they're going to move on, conquer, move on and conquer and get the more money. And, you know, as I stated, I don't like seeing, what is this, the third relocation of the National Football League in the last 2 years? With the Rams, now the Chargers, now the Raiders. It's freaking ridiculous. But in all actuality, who doesn't dream of heading west? As you know what? I've lived in Las Vegas and Nevada before, and I plan on living there again at some point in my life. And it's amazing to see the city of Vegas. They have an NHL team. Now they have an NFL team. How long before an NBA team arrives in Las Vegas right now? And then a Major League Baseball team after the fact. A city that has survived on the gaming industry, starting to branch out and starting to develop into the professional sports realm. And I'll tell you what, I can't wait to go to a football game in Las Vegas. What's the worst thing about going to an NFL football game? And nowadays, you know, attendance is down. You talk to people, you know, fantasy players, they don't want to go to a football game. They want to be in front of their computer. DFS players want to be in front of their computer. They want to be in the end zone on their phone, putting a team together. Gamblers want to be in front of a computer, watching all the games, betting at the half. You know, people don't even want to go to games to begin with. And the worst damn part of going to an NFL game is being stuck in a freaking parking lot with a bunch of bozos after the game. And I guarantee you, it's going to be a hell of a lot more fun walking out of the Raiders stadium, crossing the street and walking into a world-class facility like Mandalay Bay, into a sports book and watching the late games, than it is being stuck in the freaking parking lot in the snow at Ralph Wilson Stadium. Game Time Decisions continues. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. All right, we've got a great show lined up for you. Mike Cardano is going to join me in studio a little bit later on. As I stated earlier, we've got a ton of Major League Baseball props to break down. We'll run the gauntlet, have some fun with Cardano. Greg Olsen will join us. Not the tight end with the Carolina Panthers. But you know what? There's another Greg Olsen in baseball. We're going to get to that story with Greg, actually. Greg is the lead consultant. He's actually the pitching coach for the show Pitch, the TV show on Fox about the female pitcher. And he's like the lead consultant. He taught her to pitch and stuff. And it's unbelievable. The girl on that show, she actually can really pitch right now. And she threw the ball so much, she has like real pitching arm problems right now. Now, I got to be honest with you. I haven't watched the show before. I've seen previews of it, and I've seen stories about the show. But one thing I noticed about the show was that it was very freaking realistic looking. They did a great job with that. So we'll talk some baseball with Greg Olsen. He's a great Twitter follow, actually. So we'll have some fun with him. And let's Babano, bats leadoff. Let's bring Babano in right now. Ian Cameron, but he's known as Babano. What's going on, Babano?
I wish I could partake in an intelligent discussion about television shows, but from September to April, my percentage is 95% sports, 5% everything else on TV.
Well, you know what, sports, and that's saying something, but sports broadcasters are actually smarter than most mainstream news broadcasters are. So, you know, watching sports might keep you from getting dumb. You watch mainstream news, man, you'll feel like an idiot after a couple of minutes, Babano. You know, speaking of mainstream, we got the Final Four, South Carolina, Gonzaga, and of course the Ducks and the Tar Heels. But we'll have a lot of time to break that down throughout the week. So I brought you on to talk some NIT basketball. And I know you've been riding the wave with the Runners. Cal State Bakersfield, very improbable run. People are going to talk about the Gamecocks' improbable run to the Final Four. But, you know, nobody expected Cal State Bakersfield to go on the run that they did. They went to Cal, they beat Cal. They went to Fort Collins, they beat Colorado State. They went to Arlington, they beat the University University of Texas Arlington, who were playing good basketball, coming off a big win against BYU. Crazy freaking run for Bakersfield. Late run for these guys. Taking on Georgia Tech tonight. Tech are 2-point favorites.
Yeah, Bakersfield's been good to me, but Morency, throughout this NIT tournament. You know, I've been, I guess, quote-unquote, nitpicking them game in and game out here throughout this NIT tournament, and it's paid off well. I mean, look at their defensive numbers throughout this tournament have been staggering. It's been fantastic to see how well this team has been on the defensive end of the basketball court, holding just a majority of their foes to way below their seasonal averages in points. I mean, they hold Cal to 66. They hold Colorado State to 63, and that team can score, especially with Johnny Clavel. Been a big-time scorer for the Rams. Pretty much put the clamps down on him. And then in the last game against Arlington got it going late, but already C.S. Bakersfield had a big lead in that game and were able to hang on and get that 80-76 win, cashing as an underdog outright in all three of those games. So this is a team that's on a roll right now. The one concern, Morency, that I have here is that, you know, you were getting 6.5 against Cal. You're getting 4.5, 5 against Colorado State. You're getting 4.5 points against Arlington. Now you're getting a smaller number here as the pressure ratchets up. It's a long coast-to-coast trip for this team. Bakersfield going all the way to Madison Square in New York City for this game. Does the bright lights, big city, get to them a little bit here? Some of the quotes indicate that this team, you know, is thrilled to be here. They're excited, but they're a little bit, you know, what is it? Wide-eyed, I guess you could say, at this experience. So I'm a little bit concerned. I feel personally that if you're just jumping on the CS Bakersfield money train right now, I think you might be better off leaving the station and going home rather than getting on that train. I just worry that a lot of the point spread value might be gone from this team right now. I'm not stepping in front of them, and I give Georgia Tech a lot of credit. Josh Pastner gave the students free tickets for NIT home games. He's even free donuts or something. I read that he offered the team, or offered guys to come to the game and get tickets and show up to support this team. Just a fantastic job by him to get interest for Georgia Tech for their home games, and it's paid off. I mean, they had a great run here in the NIT to get this far. Finally showed up with a good performance on the road, and that's been a bugaboo for Georgia Tech all year. Not a great road team straight up or against the spread, but they beat Ole Miss in impressive fashion, shooting the ball better now than they have at any point. That's going to be put to the test here in a big way against this Bakersfield team, the way they've been playing defense.
Yeah, well, Georgia Tech, a great defensive team as well. Better athletes than Cal State Bakersfield, will be less overwhelmed by going to New York City and playing in this spot. It's hard to get in front of Bakersfield, but I think the run comes to an end for them as well. And, you know, Georgia Tech's been playing good basketball. One thing that's interesting, Georgia Tech 5-0 to the under in the postseason, but 4 of the 5 went over this number at 123. It's a really low number. People are really, you know, talking about the defense here, but it's a freaking low number. And this, with this NIT stuff too, with the fouls resetting, I've noticed a trend, Babano. The first halves of these games are really high scoring. You know, teams are out there, there's a lot of first half fouls. The coaches sort of, they play a lot of guys off the bench because they know they got fouls. They don't really care. It's like foul, 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 foul. Then in the second half, it really does slow down. I got screwed by a couple of total bets because of the resetting the fouls at the 10-minute mark. But I lean Georgia Tech here. I don't really want to mess with the total, which leads us into a TCU and UCF. Now, you mentioned Pastner, and we got some great coaches in this NIT. The coach of Bakersfield's won a couple of 1AA tournaments, championships before. Cal State Bakersfield's been a story program in the past. Jamie Dixon, former Pitt coach, coaching TCU for the first year, gets them into the Final Four. And the first thing I thought of with UCF, with Johnny Dawkins, I'm like, Dawkins the king of the NIT. And in fact, the guy's won 2 NIT championships for Bano already. He won twice with Stanford. He has them back here. Me and Merrill were talking about these guys, and they were good enough to be in the NCAA tournament. You know, they're a good basketball team, Central Florida. TCU, of course, beat the Kansas Jayhawks in a Big 12 tournament a couple of weeks ago. So it's an interesting basketball game, but I'm a little bit surprised to see Texas Christian favored here.
I like UCF a lot this season, especially down the stretch. I was able to come in with a few winning bets with Central Florida down the stretch, and including here in the NIT tournament. I believe I took them against Illinois State when they were a road underdog in that game, and they got the job done. And then, of course, they followed that up with a home win against the Illinois Fighting Illini, and that was an Illinois team that was taking this NIT tournament very seriously, in spite of the fact that they fired John Gross, that interim coach, really got them, Illinois really fired up and got that motivation and energy into that team to play well in the NIT. And Central Florida on the defensive end of the court has been really, really strong all season long. Their defensive numbers, Morency, really good. 36% shooting allowed, 31% from three-point range. I love Taco Fall, the big man. Just an absolute presence in that low post for Central Florida. Just a dominating interior monster, I guess you could say, for Central Florida. I've never been a huge Johnny Dawkins fan. He has had success in the NIT. I was never a big fan of him.
Well, it's bad news. You don't want to be known as the king of the NIT, right? It's like good news, bad news. Look, listen, if you're in the NIT, you might as well win it. And, you know, if you're a team like Stanford, that's what they are, right? Stanford's not a Final Four team. So them winning the NIT is nice. But as a Michigan fan, I remember Beeline won the NIT, and it does really catapult some programs. And you're an up-and-coming program like Central Florida right now, and Dawkins did such a great job here. Them winning the NIT is really big. It's same thing with Texas Christian. Jamie Dixon going there, it's big. But you're right. You know, Dawkins, you don't want to be known as, you know, the king of the NITs, but nevertheless, we know that he knows how to handle this tournament. It's a hell of a basketball game. You mentioned the defense. Both teams are very good defensively as well. Total's 132 in this game, but I think this one can get there. I don't really want to mess with the other total with Georgia Tech, because it wouldn't shock me if Georgia Tech won 55-49. You never know with these kids playing in Madison Square Garden tonight. But TCU and UCF, you know, two teams that are used to playing in these type of environments, I think the over can get there. I like UCF and the over in that game.
Yeah, I mean, the total, it's hard for me personally to bet Central Florida over the total, just the way they've been absolute. They've slowed it down a little bit. The defense has been fantastic, but it definitely could get there. And TCU athletically is going to be a much taller order for Central Florida in terms of their defensive prowess, especially the way TCU has been scoring the basketball. You look at their last two games in the NIT, Iowa and Richmond, 86 and 94 points.
That's the thing, Lobano. If you look at postseason, as you know, I talked about it on yesterday's show, like Coastal Carolina. These guys were 16 and 17 leading into the CBI. They only scored 74 points a game in a regular season, but in the postseason, they're scoring 81 a game. South Carolina scoring. You know, the postseason, you don't throw out the regular season numbers, but you have to take into consideration that things definitely get more desperate and higher in tournament play.
Jamie Dixon's done a great job with TCU. There's no denying that. I don't have a strong opinion on this game either way, but I'd have to lean a little bit to Central Florida in the underdog role, just because you get that defensive dog that's played very good at that end of the court all season long, including here in the NIT tournament. And it's also a situation where, you know, TCU laying points on a road or neutral court, that hasn't happened very often this season. So we'll see if they can handle it. But this is a point spread rule that, let's just put it this way, Horned Frog's not exactly used to it.
All right, Babano, so before we get you out of here, the Final Four is set. Well, we've got a lot of games tomorrow as well, but the college basketball season winds down. South Carolina and Gonzaga, and of course, high profile matchup with the Ducks and the Heels. Who are you expecting to play next Monday in the championship? You know, history, 17 of the last 19 champions have either been a one or a two seed. You know, history tells us that it's probably going to be North Carolina and Gonzaga.
It does. I'm going to say it's early leans. I've got to do a lot of things throughout the week to get, you know, stronger opinions on it. But right now, I think South Carolina's run's going to run out here. I do think Gonzaga will advance. I think it'll be a close game, but I don't know if South Carolina's got it in them to keep this run going against Gonzaga's, a Gonzaga team that can match South Carolina at the defensive end of the court. I think that's big. I'm going to go for an all-Pacific Northwest championship game. I'm going to call for Oregon to knock off North Carolina. I'm concerned as anyone else about the fact that Jordan Bell really their only competent big man in that front court. Can he handle that just dominating, just pound the glass attitude of the Kennedy Meeks and Isaiah Hicks and all of these big imposing forces down low for North Carolina? And if Jordan Bell gets in foul trouble, there's no doubt that's problems. That's big time problems for Oregon on Saturday. But I just like the coaching of Dana Altman to get this team ready, prepared. He's prepared this team brilliantly for the Michigan game and the Kansas game. At game plans, the players executed those plans to a T perfectly. And I think Oregon's live in this game. I don't underestimate Dana Altman here in this spot. Key is Bell's got to play big. He's got to stay out of foul trouble, got to stay on the basketball court. If all of those things happen, Oregon's got a shot.
Ian Cameron, you can find him over at sportsmemo.com to get all of his selections, get on his mailing list. Always a pleasure, Babano. Thanks for the time.
All right, Morenci, best of luck to you and all our viewers. Take care.
There's Babano with us. Great capper, very detailed write-up. So you can find him over at sportsmemo.com. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We have a former American League Rookie of the Year joining us. Greg Olson joins me next. Game time decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. I am Gabriel Morenci. You know what else continues? The countdown to the start of the Major League Baseball regular season. And I really haven't paid as much attention to spring training as I really should have, considering I'm in a fantasy draft this Saturday. But I did pay very close attention to the World Baseball Classic. And you know what? That was a hell of a lot more fun than watching Cactus League games. But we're fired up, man. And we've been on a roll. We've had great baseball guests on the show over the last couple of weeks. Bill Lee was off the hook last week. Bill Lee, Tim Raines, Dave Van Horn. I think we might have Lenny Dykstra. Speaking of off the hook, Lenny Dykstra joins us. And no, I guess Lenny's not in jail. No, so Lenny Dykstra on the radar. But let's bring in a man that lives and breathes the game. He's a consultant on the Fox Show Pitch that I'm sure you've seen before. And the action looks so freaking realistic in that show. But 1989 Rookie of the Year, former Major League Baseball All-Star, Auburn Tiger, Baltimore Oriole, Arizona Diamondback, Atlanta Braves. Greg Olson steps up and joins us. What's up, Greg? How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Greg. So I know there was confusion in the past because there was another big league player named Greg Olson, but how many times have you been confused for the tight end in Carolina Panther, Greg Olson?
You know what? Recently, I was doing a Little League opening day, and the turnout was just way too good. So I was assuming they thought I was the tight end coming off the playoffs and everything else. And I was like, I am not the tight end. I know you guys are back a ways and can't really see up close, but no, I got a lot of confusion with the other Greg Olson. We were both in the All-Star game together, and
that's awesome.
So I get his mail every once in a while, but during the All-Star game,
you got his like voice messages and stuff in the hotel, right? Like people are leaving messages for him.
I got all his voice messages, and he got my laundry, and it was kind of a mess.
Yeah, it's a good thing that he's a straight arrow and a clean living guy. I'm the type of guy, I don't want people hearing my voice message. Yeah, the massage therapist will be there at 5:30, Mr. Olson.
Yeah, the funny thing is we got the only difference in our name is he's got the same middle name. So we're both Greg William Olson.
That's crazy. That's some crazy stuff. So listen, I want to talk some big league baseball and get some stories from you in a minute. But I wanted to talk to you about how you ended up getting involved with the Fox television show Pitch and became the consultant. And so one thing that I noticed about this show from, you know, the opening preview to any time that I've checked it out, and, you know, to be honest with you, I haven't followed it. I saw the show come out, but, you know, in doing a little research for you coming on about the show, I'm like, man, these script and storylines look very interesting, actually. And it's not just about a chick pitcher, so to speak, but big league life as well. But how did this come about for you?
I started a baseball academy out here in Southern California with Chad Kruder. And Chad was the baseball consultant on Moneyball when he was coaching at, he was the head baseball coach at USC.
Yeah.
So he had some of the connections, and whoever was, this guy named Mike Fisher is in charge of all the baseball, football movies, commercials. He called Kruder up, and they needed a pitching coach the next day for, you know, the starting of the pilot. Apparently, Kylie Bunbury had fired her previous pitching coach, and he said, Kruder said, I can't be down there tomorrow morning for the next 12 days. And I was like, I can. So that was it. I went down the next morning, started working with, you know, MP Gosselaar and Kylie, and stayed on, and we shot, we had 10 shows and 10 episodes, and I was on set either training her, working with, you know, doing the baseball consulting piece. They actually even gave me a line in show 9. So now I'm technically an actor. So it was a blast. It was such a different world, you know, going from the sports world to that. I had no concept, and I was stepping on everybody's toes.
And as far as Kylie, Kylie's concerned, you know, she's almost a natural, isn't it? I know she played soccer a little bit, but for an actress, you know, what were you thinking? Oh, dear God, how the hell am I going to teach an actress like a curveball, or, you know, how am I going to do this? But, you know, she just, you know, you look at her and it looks extremely natural. She's obviously athletically gifted.
Yes, she is, and she put in months of training on the throwing mechanics, and by the time I got there, you know, I just tried to fix just a little piece that, you know, for me, a baseball guy, you know, would notice it, but you know, that was the only thing I had to do, and then it was just constantly just trying to maintain, you know, that she's healthy, because when we get down there on set for the pilot, you know, it was 5 or 6 days on the field, and if you're not, you know, used to doing that, all the throwing and everything else, you know, her arm was getting sore, and so it was just, a lot of it was trying to maintain that, you know, she stayed healthy.
That's what makes it good, though. That, you know, they don't have a stunt double, and you can tell when you're watching it, and, oh, they cut away, and they're showing from the back. I have a lot of respect, and I got to tell you, I really want to check it out. I'm going to check this show out and get caught up on this. So I wanted to ask you as well, you came into the league, and Frank Robinson, and I got a chuckle. I was like, oh, yeah, Frank Robinson was his manager when he came into the league, and I had an opportunity to hang around Frank Robinson in the final years and the Montreal Expos, and I was a big fan of his, and I used to wait until everyone would leave, you know, his office after, and it'd be me and maybe another guy or a couple other guys, and then he would tell us the real stories when everyone else was gone. And he was like, you want to know the truth about Michael Jordan? And he'd talk about how his great friends with the Rockford Files and James Garner, and I'm good friends with Al Davis and Bill Cosby, and all these crazy stories and stuff. But I remember one night he pissed off Dusty Baker, and the Expos were like up 8-1, and the Expos stole a base. Dusty Baker's yelling at him, and you're a jerk, you broke the code. And Frank said after, there's no code. He's like, my bullpen's terrible. He goes, if they send over a written contract saying they're going to try to stop scoring, then I won't try to steal a base. He said, F the code. And he was telling me after, there is no code. There is no code. You were a big leaguer a long time, and you played with the Atlanta Braves, who were very, you know, fundamental and sort of code-like. Where do you stand on all of this? Is there an unwritten code with baseball? Is it true?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. If you and you know what, it's one of those where it's assumed that you know.
Yeah.
And the only way that you actually figure it out and learn it is by making the mistake, and then something happens.
Is there a tug of war now, though, Greg? Is there a tug of war with the Bryce Harpers of the world and the Puigs of the world that they don't know and they don't care? They're saying F your codes?
I think there is a little bit. You know what? The game has evolved. You know, I came up at the end of the 80s, played into the 2000s, and I was just with the cell phones and everybody having, you know, all the technology. The game was changing, and I didn't like it. By the time that I got out, you know, everything's great, but you know, your job's to go out there and win baseball games and succeed on the field. And you know, if you don't have a bonding, you don't have the timing, you don't have a relationship with your other players, then I don't think your team's going to be as successful. And I was just seeing, you know, guys rushing out of the clubhouse, guys on their phones right after the game ends.
Yeah.
And it was just, you know what, this is my, you know, I grew up with the Ripken brothers, and you know, I was in the clubhouse till, you know, 1 a.m. talking baseball. And there was no cell phones back then, shockingly to most of your listeners. There were no cell phones back in 1989. And that was how you learned to play. That was how you learned what the code was. And I don't think guys are spending time as a team, you know, hanging out doing stupid stuff. And I think that part of the game's getting lost, and the code's kind of going with it.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you say that. So you've almost seen, and we've seen in society as well, right? I mean, how disconnected people are, conversation, social skills, people are lonely, people are single, people are sitting at home typing away. People live vicariously through computers now. And it's interesting. You saw the beginning of the fracture of this in a clubhouse and what it can mean to a sports team.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I sound like an old guy. I guess I am. But, you know, like I said, I grew up and sit, you know, after the game ends, you know, have a couple glasses of milk or a pop or,
yeah,
you know, loosely terminology for a couple beers. And you're just sitting there talking about the game.
Dude, Major League Baseball clubhouse, and I've covered all sports. I've been in all locker rooms and stuff over the years. Baseball's the only one that I'm not a jealous guy, but that's the only life, Greg, I'm like, damn. And I imagine is that thing you miss the most is, you know, I was in the media. I used to get there the first second I was allowed to get there, 3:00. I'd get there at 3:01. I was there. I liked the smells. I wanted the ice cream. I'd go and I'd hang around the batting cage and watch BP. I didn't have to get there at 3:00. I was there from 3:00 until about 1 a.m, like you said. Soaked it all up, man. Like, you know, couldn't get enough of it.
Yeah, it's an unbelievable life. And you know, in my 13 years of playing baseball, there was probably one guy I didn't like that I played with. And you got 25 guys on a team. You got to give or take 190 days.
Am I being a jerk if I ask who the guy was?
No, you're not being a jerk. I'm just not going to give it up. But, I mean, that's just an example of, you know, what? You're bonding with these guys, and you might be different, but you got the same goal, and you're spending time, and you're fighting together, and it's a great atmosphere. And I think it's, you know, just like you said, it's everybody's got a face in the phone and walking off curbs and running into signs, and it's just not, I don't think it's a great way to build relationships. So that's just, you know, like I said, I'm old and I saw the way it was, and I came in with guys that knew how to play the right way because they grew up around the baseball field with Cal Ripken Sr. And that's who taught me. And so it was my job to, you know, carry on that legacy to as far as I could carry it on.
1994, you're on the Braves. A lot of people in Montreal remember, of course. There's the lockout, the Expos, a hell of a team that year. You know, and people, I tell people, and the people are like, oh, the Expos are going to win the World Series. There's no guarantees the Expos are going to win the World Series that year. But how good was that team that year? And how do you think things would have played out if that World Series and, you know, the season didn't get shortened? Does it piss you off? Like that, you know, it's, I know you were in the league a while, 13 years, but that's a shot at winning a title that wasn't there for you, right? Looking back on that season, what do you recall from that?
Well, you know, I was coming off an elbow injury, and I signed with the Braves because they had the best pitching coach, and they had an opportunity that they needed a closer. So I went down there. I mean, it was amazing to be around, you know, Greg Maddux, Tom Glavin, you know, just watching those guys go about their daily business. And it goes back to what I said. These guys took care of themselves. They came to the park every day prepared. They knew exactly how they wanted to face, you know, Marquise Grissom and Rondell White and all these guys that, you know, were running with the Expos, and it was a pleasure to work with those guys. It's fun to be around guys that are pros, and they had a bunch of guys. Fred McGriff with the Braves was these guys are pros. Yeah. I stunk that year. I was coming off an elbow injury, and I was a train wreck. So I had I was not going to have any say in what happened in that playoff race with the Expos and the Braves. But I was sitting down there watching.
I saw a stat, and it's funny. A guy actually joining us in a couple of minutes. I just saw him rear his ugly head in a studio here. And Mike Cardano, he actually tweeted out a stat. Greg Maddux, he tweeted out the other day. Greg Maddux faced 20,421 batters in his career. Only 310 times was there a 3-0 count. 177 of those times it was an intentional walk.
That's unbelievable.
Like the pinpoint accuracy. Come on, man. Like, I can't go to the bathroom that many times without missing the toilet. Like, come on. Like, these numbers are crazy.
Yeah, and that, you know what? I mean, that goes down to, you know, his body control and his mechanics and being able to consistently duplicate making a pitch. You know, everybody just thinks the pitcher just steps up, picks up a leg, and goes. There's, you know, like I said, you can get, I was a train wreck in 94, and I probably had as many 3-0 counts as he did that year, and I pitched probably about 200 innings less. So
you know, we got to get out of here, but you know, Greg, I'm a gambling man. And I'll admit it, like, I'm a gambling man, and it sucks. Like, if you lose your first couple of bets of the night, you're like, oh, I can't believe this. I'm down 0-2. I'm already down 3 units. This is brutal. Is it the same thing for a pitcher, like, when things aren't going well? You're like, I can't believe this. It's already 3-0. I'm screwed. Like, it's so mental, isn't it?
It really is. You know, and it's frame of mind going into the game is a lot of it. And then, you know, things can snowball a little bit. You know, it's not the guys that you're facing are so talented that you're not walking out there just going, oh, this is going to be easy. you know, you can make a pitch, break a bat, and it flips over second base. They bunt him over to second base, and somebody flips another one over shortstop, and next thing I know, you know, I just blew the save.
Yeah.
And you're going, what I really do wrong here?
Yeah.
Nothing.
It's like life,
know?
Huh?
So, yeah, a little bit it is. It's just, you know, you just kind of go out and you fight every day and you do your best, and hopefully you learn some lessons, and you keep, you know, the next time you face those same guys, it, you know, all right, let's make an adjustment. Let's see what, you know, let's see what they're doing now.
Hey.
And that's pitching.
Hey, Greg, it was great having you on the show. Thanks a lot for taking the time to be with us and talking some baseball. I look forward to doing it again. Best of luck. Thanks for the time, man.
My pleasure. Thank you.
There's Greg Olson with his former Rookie of the Year. A hell of a closer. He's a member of the Baltimore Orioles Hall of Fame. And we're going to be joined next by a member of the Fantasy Sports Hall of Shame. Mike Cardano joins me next. Game Time Decisions on the Fantasy Sports Network continues. Well, 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 look what the cat drag did. As I said, we've got the one and only Mike Cardano in studio. What's going on, Mike?
I am here in the flesh.
All right, let's do this thing. We went a little long with Greg Olson, but we still got a couple of minutes. We'll talk some Major League Baseball props and a couple of other things. March Madness, Final Four, nearly 19 million brackets, Mike. Only 657 of them had the correct Final Four.
Who did I tell you was going to win the whole thing when the last time I was on? Gonzaga.
And you said, yeah, you did. You picked Gonzaga. So you stick away with this.
It's going to be the 2-1 seeds.
Yeah, you're right. So you're looking good. You got a legitimate chance right now. The NCAA's worst nightmare, is it CBS? I don't even know where the game's going to be on. It used to always be CBS. TBS, CBS, whatever the hell it's going to be on. But their worst nightmare would be South Carolina versus Oregon. That's like the least glamorous matchup. North Carolina versus Gonzaga, sellable. Gonzaga versus Oregon, interesting, but a train wreck because they're both from the Pacific Northwest. So they need, and they're hoping, and I would expect that it would be a Gonzaga, North Carolina.
Carolinas against each other?
That'd be all right. Yeah. It's not going to happen.
No.
All right, so LeVar Ball. I saw you tweeting about LeVar Ball, and you found the video. Remember LeVar Ball? Lonzo Ball's father said he would beat Michael Jordan. Well, there's video of him playing just in a men's pickup league. And do we have the video here? He wouldn't beat Mike Cardano in a game of one-on-one, let alone Michael Jordan.
Now, if you notice, there's a fake Michael Jordan in here, number 23, who's draining threes on him.
Yeah, I know.
And he can't cover number 54 either. So, I don't know. Was that a shot?
That was LeVar just careening through the paint there.
Yeah.
Like, dude, he's the worst guy on the court. Like you said, like the guy in the Jordan, look, there's a white guy in a Jordan jersey who's better than he is, let alone the real. There he is.
He could use a salad, no? I mean, he's...
He's not even as good as like the old Joes on Pros versus Joes. Remember that show?
Yeah, I do.
That was a great show, huh?
My favorite was when they had the teams. They had John Rocker and Darren Dalton together trying to beat up on the. That was my favorite.
I remember the NBA player Kevin Willis?
Yeah.
Big muscle, ripped guy. He was on the show, and then the Joe was like chirping to him. Willis just started elbowing him in the face.
What sport did you like the best? Which sport?
What, on Pros versus Joes? I like the baseball and the basketball. Baseball better, because football, they kind of took it easy on them. You could tell football's older. It's different, right? Baseball was good. Like you said, I liked watching Rocker throw a fastball at these guys.
But I asked Johnny Franco, he was on there, and I said, were you trying to strike the guy out? He said, no, I can't just strike everybody out.
That's the thing that pisses me off, too, because I've watched that show, and I'm like, that's crap. This guy ain't making that shot. But you know the producers are like, listen, don't just win 21-0, right? Because it's not going to be entertaining. Okay, so I've only got a couple of minutes here, unfortunately, Mike. Major League Baseball props, number of no-hitters this year. Over, under 3.5. Over is plus 125. Under is minus 175. There was only one no-hitter last year.
Yeah, I know. That was an anomaly from the previous years, but...
Seven in 2015, five in 2014.
Gave this too much specialization right now. You saw ever since the Royals won the World Series, that's the way things are going, and I don't think there's going to be enough teams that let the starters go that long to get that many no-hitters.
And another thing is, too, this correlates with the will there be a 20-game winner. Number of pitchers to win 20 games or more, over 2.5, minus 175, under plus 125. There were three 20-game winners last year. There were two 20-game winners in 2015. But one thing I've noticed, Mike, the 20-game winners, it's not the guys that you think. Like we said, Kershaw's only top 16 twice in his career.
Right.
Jay Happ wins 20 games. Rick Porcello comes out of nowhere and wins 20 games.
Happ, they don't care if he blows out his arm, so just let him go.
That's what I'm saying. There's always going to be some fluke guy that wins 20 games. But
I say under.
Under 2.5 guys.
Same thing because of the specialists. I think it prevails. I don't think there's going to be enough guys that go deep enough into the games in order to get to 20.
I would agree. I'd go under 3.5 and under 2.5 as well. Will anybody have 50 or more saves? Speaking of Greg Olsen, who we just had on the show.
That number is just too high to me. What is it, one last year?
Yeah, for your boy, Familia.
You know, what I said lends into it, but I think it's just too high. The number's too high.
And you know what? In 2015, only one guy topped it, too. So if you have one guy, you're almost better off saying no at that plus 120. Will any pitcher have more than 16 strikeouts in a game this year? Yes is minus 163. No, plus 120.
There's a lot of strikeout pitchers in the game, but there again, you have to go deep enough into the game. So I don't think they get the opportunity to do it. I'm going to say no.
You know, it's crazy.
If it was 15, I might say yes. That you have to be over 16.
17.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, 16. 16, you get it. All right. You know, it's crazy. Only 20 pitchers in Major League Baseball history have struck out 18 or more in a single game. All right, last one on the way out here. Will any team win 100 or more games? Yes is minus 150. No is plus 110. I think it's a bad bet if you take this because the Cubs have the highest win total, 96.5. So why would you bet the Cubs to win 100 games at minus 150 when you can get them at 96. The Red Sox are good. They're not winning 100, and the Dodgers aren't winning 100 either.
I think there's too much parity. My money would have to go no.
Yeah, no, at plus 110. All right, so we're going to come back with our NBA DFS lineup of the day, and it's a damn good one today, actually. We got some real good value, 6 and 7 times your value per player, and we got a ton of plays of the day for you as well. As always, we got to be pretty fast because we went long on the program. But let's start off with our NBA DFS lineup. We've got Golden State and Houston on tap this evening. Should be a three-ball palooza. I wanted to play Harden, but instead I'm going to spend $3,000 less and take Steph Curry. He's heating up. He's put up 116 DK points in his last two games. Two games versus the Rockets this year. He's put up 26.6 assists and 2 rebounds on average per game. All right, Millsap's out. Bazemore's out. Cephalosha's out, which means my boy from Michigan, Tim Hardaway Jr., has a chance to go off. Means a ton of minutes. He's put up 116 DK points in the last three games. Paul George been rock solid this month. I've been taking him this month in the month of March. Last couple of games averages 28.3 points per game. T-Wolves in a free fall over the last six. T-Wolves giving up 117 points per game. Should be points on the board. Hollis Jefferson, $5,200. Dude's been on fire. He's put up 99 DK points in the last three games. Only 62 minutes on the floor. He's put up 32 or more DK points in three straight games. He's averaging 12 boards a game. All right, Okafor should be out. Long has been getting some minutes for the Sixers. He put up 32 DK points for $3,800 versus the Pacers. Put up 31 DK points for $3,400 versus the Bulls. This guy's giving us like 9-10 times our value. I'm taking Long tonight at $4,200. Reggie Jackson is sidelined. Ish Smith is in. I don't love Ish Smith, but guy's going to play a ton of minutes tonight, so he should give us a fantasy point a minute. McDaniels on the Nets. Nice sneaky play here. Scored double-digit points in the Nets' last four games. And we'll go with Ricky Rubio, 33 DK points or more in 8 of the last 10 games. As far as our plays of the day are concerned, we got the NIT, Georgia Tech and Bakersfield. Low-scoring game tonight. I like Georgia Tech to get it done. Central Florida and Texas Christian, hell of a basketball game. Give me the underdog. I think we can get there, and we're going to take the over at 132. NBA basketball, Timberwolves have given up 117 points per game and by average over the last six games. Pacers, T-Wolves over 208. Detroit Pistons are terrible. Give me the Miami Heat. It's a big playoff battle game, too. Heat are just a better team. They're going to win. The Phoenix Suns suck, but the Atlanta Hawks don't have any players. As long as Phoenix shows up tonight, they're going to hang around the 8. Rockets, Warriors. Give me the Rockets, minus 120. Blazers. Love the Blazers to beat the Nuggets tonight. Predators. I don't know why they're such big underdogs. And the Leafs always lose when I take them, but I'm taking the Leafs. May the winners be yours.